Okay, we're about to embark upon a new sugya, but it's not really a new sugya in the sense that many of the terms and much of the lumdus that we spoke about in the past have really set the stage for what we're about to begin to discuss now. So just as recap for a moment, the past sugya we focused almost on the academics, almost on the background, as to the difference between a Kli Rishon and a Kli Sheni in the sense of conceptually, why there is such a difference in terms of Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni, both in terms of Maseches Chulin, as well as in terms of Maseches Shabbos. We find in two places in Shas, in our sugya and the third bed of Shabbos, Chazal differentiate between a Kli Rishon that can accomplish an act of Bishul, whereas a Kli Sheni, for the most part, Kli Sheni in Ravasha. So we spent a lot of time trying to understand conceptually why that's true. We spent a lot of time focusing on the Rishami, on the different interpretations of Rishami, the possible rejection of Rishami. And we spoke a little bit about Tosa Shita, about the Tefanos Nechamos and the Tefanos Nekaros. So we came up with a couple of different theories as to why there is such a difference between Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni. Now we're going to move to the next step. And this sugya is going to begin to take some of those klal that we spoke about and now try to plug into practically how do we know whether any given Kli is a Kli Rishon or any given Kli is a Kli Sheni. Now it sounds like a little bit of a strange question, because we've been already defining Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni fairly common definition, namely a Kli Rishon is something that either was on the fire or still on the fire, depending on the nuance of the Yerushalmi. The Kli Sheni is when the contents of the pot have been emptied into a bowl. So it sounds like it's really a no-brainer. We know what a Kli Rishon is. We know what a Kli Sheni is. So how can we have a whole new sugya about Hagdoras Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni? We'll see as the sugya develops that there's a lot more to find out, a lot more to determine how exactly you define Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni, and much of it has to do with everything we've been talking about in the last couple of days, why conceptually there's a difference. Once we understand why there's a difference with the last sugya, then we'll be able to plug in as to what is and what is not a Kli Rishon, what's not a Kli Sheni. And of course, the nafkaminas, our sugya and chulin are going to relate to Basa B'cholov, and it's of course going to spill over to Maseches Shabbos as well. So the sugya of defining Kli Rishon versus Kli Sheni begins exactly where we left off in the last sugya. So it may sound like a familiar ma'amokom, but you have to start, you have to read it again. On the first of the Rambam comments, it's the famous Tosin Shabbos Daf Yom Beis. The Tosin poses the question, Teima Maishna Kli Sheni and Kli Rishon. What is the difference between a Kli Rishon and a Kli Sheni? The Iyad Saledis, if it's so hot that it's Iyad Saledis bow, a few of Kli Sheni, now, I mean, even if it's a Kli Sheni, it should pose a problem. The Iyad Yad Saledis, and in fact, if it's not Yad Saledis, not so hot, a few Kli Rishon, now, I mean, Ravashal. So there shouldn't be a problem altogether. So Tosin's famous question, what is the difference between Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni? It's clearly not just a function of temperature. So Tosa says the famous principle that a Kli Rishon, because it was sitting on the fire, not only is the water potentially hot, but the walls of the hot of the pot are also hot. It's holding on to the heat, and therefore therefore, the halacha tells us that as long as the contents of the pot, the water of the pot, is yatsa letters bow, that can affect the bishul. About Kli Sheni, but Kli Sheni, afagav the yatsa letters bow, even though practically the water is very, very hot, but mutter, that's not called bishul. She ain't of nosem chamin v'olechem iskara, because the walls are not hot. It's called the funnest pekaros. The walls are actually cooling down. Not only is the temperature right now critical, but the temperature of the walls, which direction it's going in, is also critical as well. So this Tosis, although just started out almost like an academic question, why is there a difference between the two? This is going to set the stage for a practical difference as well, in terms of defining what Kli Rishon is, what Kli Sheni is. If the focus is going to be on the Defanos, either the Defanos Bechamos, the Defanos Bekaros, that may change radically what a definition of Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni is all about. So this part of the sugya begins, the second of the Rambam Kamos, a statement of the Shulchan Aruch in Yerodeh and Sadi Dal Zayin. Shulchan Aruch just depicts almost like a regular kitchen error. Basar Reseach Shechadcho Besachin Chelevis. Person has a piece of meat, and the meat is very hot. Reseach. If it's not Reseach, if it's not hot, it's not yet a lettuce bow. So then we all know there's a principle called tzarim b'tzarim hadocha. Two things are cold. You just ignore it. Just wash it off. But here you have a hot piece of meat. And you cut the hot piece of meat with a milchik knife. So now you have potentially two problems. You may have trafed up the meat, and you may have trafed up the knife. So Shmuel continues, kol lachatich asura. So the first shaila is vis-a-vis the meat. So the entire piece of meat is now traf, because it has blias, it has taste, it has absorption that was inside the walls of the milchik knife that are now coming out. This is all part of the parasha that we spoke about many times already this year, kasher, kelim, and tam, kikra, and ices, and about the whole sugyas of ta'am, of blias. But since, of course, Allah recognizes the blias in the knife as coming out, so now you have a milchik that's shooting out of this knife into the piece of meat, so you have a problem. The only thing that could salvage is meat. If you have shishim in the piece of meat corresponding to the milchik belias that are now entering into the meat, then you're good to go. Then you're no worse than a tipas chol shenof l'toch habasar. We learned this also. The Mishnah tells us that if you have a drop of milk that falls into a big pot of meat, so the Mishnah says it's supposed to raise a bit of sintam. If you have shishim in the pot, or let's say if you didn't have an entire pot of meat, you just had a piece of meat, wherever the tarobus is labeled, wherever you cut off and you say, this is the tarobus, if you don't have enough tam in the milk to give off the tam to the meat, then everything is okay. How would you know whether you have tam or not? So again, we spoke about this also many times earlier this year. You have to have a non-Jew taste it for you. And what if you can't find a non-Jew for whatever reason? It's not a practical solution. So then the Gemara says, okay, no big deal. Then you go with the magic number shishim, that as long as you have 60 times of one item to the small drop of the other item, you can assume that there's probably not in the same stop. So that's the way we practice today. We spoke about this also earlier. The Ramon tells us that generally speaking, our practice, we don't rely on the non-Jews today for a technical variety of reasons. And we go down the second route, because I'll say either route is okay. The Gemara actually prefers asking a non-Jew. The Gemara says, if the non-Jew is not available, you can't do whatever it is, then you go for shishim. So for whatever technical, logistical reasons, we don't ask the non-Jews today. So therefore, for us, we just go down the second route of Chazal. We always b'shai b'shishim. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. And very simply, make a calculation of shishim. And comes the Ramah, take a look at the second line, where the Shulchan Aruch just told us that the piece of meat became treif. Says the Ramah, v'chol zeh b'psar rosech b'kli rishayin. When is all of this true? This is only true that the knife causes problems into the meat. That's only true when the meat was a kli rishon. So that means the meat was still in a pot. Let's say the meat's taking place in the grill. It's taking place in a kli rishon. It's taking place where either there's fire present now, or at least it's in the same utensil that at one time was on the fire. So if you'll see, if I would say you take a pot of chicken soup off the fire, there's a piece of chicken in there, and you start cutting the chicken inside the pot with a milchik knife, that poses a problem. That's what the Shulchan tells us. That's going to trafe up and to require shishim. But if you took the piece of chicken out of the pot and you put it into a klisheni, so then things are significantly better. Now, we're going to leave out the details now for just how significantly they're better. Are there still issues you have to worry about? Maybe certain issues with the end. Maybe there's still some. Maybe the knife is not clean. And those are like technical issues. But the Ikaron, the Ramon tells us that if it's a klisheni, basically, fundamentally, there are no blias. Now, that is a loaded statement in the Ramon, that there are no blias in a klisheni. It's loaded for the following reason. There is no Gemara explicitly that makes that statement, that there are no blias in a klisheni. The Gemara says there's no bishul in a klisheni. The Gemara says it both in Chul and Legabe Bas B'chalav, as well as in Shabbos, Legabe Bishul B'Shabbos. But the Gemara never ever says that Huadinami, there are no blias in a klisheni. That was a big machlekes in Rishayim. So there is some Rishayim with the opinion that blias and bishul go hand in hand. That this Parsha Satar of blias, and again, we have so many kairos for the Parsha Satar of blias. We have Parshas Matas of next week, of Kashu and Kalim, and we have the Mishras of Nazir, and we have maybe Bas B'chalav, and that. There's sort of different sources in the Torah for this idea of ta'am ki'ikr, the idea that even though we can't quite see it, but there are blias that concern us. And we all know that blias only take place physically if there's some kind of a heat, or unless there's some other kind of equivalency. Yeah, we spoke about this also much earlier in the year. If it's kavush kevavushal, if two things are soaking for a long time together, if it's balia kirisek, it's very, very salty foods, those may also be a concern of blias. But by and large, blias are limited to heat. 99% of blias shilas that happen in the kitchen are heat-related. So a couple of groups will be sharing and say that what constitutes heat in halacha? how hot something has to be in halacha in order to be a probably is. So obviously yatzal lezbo, but comes a rishonim and say yatzal lezbo itself is not enough. It has to be a klirish. Why is that? Because in order to pose a problem of blias, it has to be a problem of bishul. Means bishul and blias go hand in hand. Whatever type of a utensil is eligible to create a bishul, vis-a-vis bishul b'shabbos, vis-a-vis bishul bas mechalav, if it's eligible to create a bishul, then it's eligible to create blias. And if it's ineligible to create bishul, because klisheni ain't a bashel, then there are no blias either. Then halachli, that's called seyde. So that's a very, very long lishna shayla. When we say the klisheni and the bashel, does that mean that's mamash like tsayne? It's like halachli tsayne, it's mamash cold, and it's cold or no bleas? What do I say? No. Bleas luchon and bishul luchon. Bishul is a very specific halachic category. Bishul is an amaloch and Shabbos. So in order to be bishul, there are a whole series of different criteria has to be met, one of them being kli rishon. But bleas, these are the function of tzias. Either yeah or no, either it's hot or not. So that's a huge machlokes, a major machlokes to Mishayim. Whether the whole sugya of klimisha klisheni has any relevance when we're dealing with hilchos blias, not hilchos bishul. So the Ramah happens to be the Rosh HaMekilim B'dava. The Ramah in a few places in your day is lenient on this topic, and this is one of them. The Ramah writes, if it's only a klisheni, forget about it. So truth to be told, that others disagree with the Ramah. The Taz, the Shach, others question, maybe the Chachilu, but yeah, the different nuances in Poskim, there is a major machlokes of Rishonim, and we're not even sure we're going to accept the Ramah's Pesach. A cliche ain't a mavliya, there's no bliya in a cliche. But for our purposes, let's give to the Ramah for a minute. Let's play along with the psak of the Ramah. Let's accept the psak of the Ramah for the purposes of our discussion. And let's work with the assumption, yes, klirisha mavliya, no, cliche ain't a mavliya. Let's assume that the same chiluk to bishul carries over to bliya as well. But wait a second, did the Ramah accurately portray what is a cliche? Let's not forget, what was the case that the Shulchan Aruch was talking about, that Ramah was going on when he limited the Shulchan Aruch to Kli Rishon? The Shulchan Aruch, back to a minute, to the first line of the second Rambam Kabbalah, was Basar Reseach Shechascha B'Sachin Chilemes. This is a piece of meat that's being cut with a knife. This is not a bowl of soup. It's not even a bowl of cholent. This is a piece of steak. This is a piece of meat. This is a piece of chicken. This is a big chunk of meat. A chatichas basar, you're cutting with a knife. You're not scooping out with a spoon. You're cutting it with a knife. And the Ramah is still okay to call that also nikli sheni. So what the Ramah just said is something huge. The Ramah just said, I took a piece of meat, a hot piece, good shmach piece of meat, and I put it onto a plate. So I basically put it onto a klisheni. That's called a klisheni. And ate a mevasho, and ate a mevliya. Everything's good to go. No, please, nothing to worry about. Wait a second. Does that scenario even meet the criteria of klisheni altogether? Maybe the whole sugya of klisheni means when I take, let's say the marshal, the original case of klisheni as appears in Masechta Shabbos, I took water out of the bathtub and I put it into a bucket. That's the klisheni harba b'alocha. I took some chicken soup and I poured it into a bowl and now I put a milchik spoon into that bowl. That's called the cliche in halacha. But here you're dealing with a solid piece of food. Does a solid piece of food lend itself to the sugya cliche? So the Ramah unequivocally says yes. That's what Ramah's talking about. The Ramah differentiates between cliche and cliche, even though the Ramah knew full well we're talking about a solid piece of food. Why should we or should we not? The third of the Ramah comes. So if we take a look at the Taz. B'toras chatas kosov gam kenochi. V'temahani sheharav Ramah rogel lohavi ha'isa behet b'chol mekamos. The Taz says, stylistically, if you're familiar with the works of the Ramah in Yeridaya quotes the Issa behet almost all the time. Issa behet was a very, very small sefer. It was written by the Talmud of the Tumas HaDeshen. It's talking about a little bit before the time of the Ramah. It's one of the classic svarim on Chulin / Yeridaya. The Sefer Isvehet, it's a really, really small Sefer. It's called the Isvehet HaOruch. I'm not sure what the Kotzer version is. It's a really, really small, thin Sefer. But it's become almost like the link between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, the Pesachim of the Ramah particularly, and the Rishayim. So the Isvehet there is critical. And the Ramah quotes it all the time. The Taz says, but Khan, strangely enough, Lo Hevi Devar. It says here in the Ramah, and Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote this Isvehetu at all. What did the Isvehetu say? Says that when you have a piece of solid meat, that is not klisheni. A piece of solid meat retains the status of a kli rishon, even though it has been transferred to a plate. Even though it's quote unquote been transferred to a klisheni, that is not relevant. Transferring a solid piece of food does not impact on its kli rishon status. Why? The Bidav Yavesh says this matter. The Bidav Yavesh leka the fadas hamakaros comes this matter and references back to our Tosfos. Comes this matter and says that the whole reason why we differentiated between kli rishon and klisheni in the first place was because of the presence of the fadas makaros. Because you have the cool walls, the walls are cold in a klisheni and they're cooling off the contents. A little bit of physics, says the Yisra'atah. But man, the Rav Amurim, that there's something that's cooling down the contents. That's when you have a liquid. The liquid takes the shape of its container. And as such, it takes the characteristics of its container. And if the container, the walls of the container are cold, that's going to impact on the ultimate temperature of the food. When you're dealing with a Dabar Gush, what's called, that's the phrase that the Pelosim call it, a Dabar Gush, a Chaticha, a piece of hot meat. If you take a piece of hot meat out of a pot and put it onto a plate, and then you transfer it onto another plate, and you keep on transferring it 100 times over, it's lomalav lenerit. It's not going to impact on the ability of that piece of meat to cause bleas, to cause bishul, etc. That's a davagush, and the davagush doesn't lend itself to the distinction between kli rishon and klisheni. So comes the Isvehetra and continues. The bedava yavish leikin the fadas habakaros a mavashel. Miu calls vachi yatzaletis bo. He says it's just still be yatzaletis bo. That's a given. The main shishim, and if you lo yitzuyer that you cut your piece of meat, it's now on a 20th plate. It was already taken out of the pot and it's been put on a serving tray, and now it's on your plate. Then you transfer to somebody else's plate. It's on a third guy's plate. If it's still yatzaletis bo, if you cut that piece of meat with a milking knife, you have a very very serious problem. How serious do you have a problem? So says this in Hetav, in Ein Shishim, HaBosar Osar Afilu Bahano'o. That meat is Osar Bahano'o. Why is it Osar Bahano'o? Because it's Bosar B'Cholov. That's what's Osar Bahano'o. Now, when the Isra Hetav just made that statement, that it's Osar Bahano'o, the Isra Hetav just made a huge, huge, huge jump. Because it's one thing to say that you have a problem and you can't eat the meat. It's a whole other story to say that meat is awesome, but no, you can't derive benefit from meat. What kind of difference of jump is that? Isn't possible chalav awesome, but no? So this is a throwback to sugi that we just learned the last week. Namely, yes, possible chalav is awesome, but no, if it's possible chalav diaraisa. If it's merely possible chalav diarabon for whatever reason, so we learned this in the Rambam, the Gemara, we pass it unequivocally in Shulchan Aruch, that Pesar, Bas b'chol d'arayis is also b'ano. Bas b'chol d'rabbanon is also b'yachiva, but it's not also b'ano. So when the Isra'atah made this sweeping statement that Dova Gush poses a problem, just how bad a problem does it pose? A really bad problem. A huge problem. It poses a problem on love of d'arayis. So the Isra'atah is now telling us, Chiddush Agav Chiddush. He was the one who just was Mechadish to us that there is a concept of Dova Gush, and Dova Gush in a sense, overrides any possible leniencies of klisheni. That he got right out of Atosis. And that critical characteristic of the Fadas Makaros. But then the Isvehetah went a step further and saying, just how serious a problem is it? Very serious. It's a problem even with Daraisa. And the Isvehetah continues. Well, with klisheni, you get that klisheni that's silent or so called Shah. But now the Isvehetah runs into a problem. It's almost like an interplay between a little bit of a Taramah, the Isvehetah, because he's trying to juggle a halakha concept and a little bit of a scientific concept. So now the Isvehetah says, what? I just told you that every piece of hot meat, every dvagush, every chaticha shal basar, automatically retains the status of a kli rishon, no matter what happens. Switching it to a plate doesn't impact it. And sounds like even a level of deraisa, because you don't have the funnest makaros. But he says, wait, I forgot Says, wait a second, wait, hold the phone, says this avatar. It's true, you don't have the funnest bakaros, but you equally don't have the funnest bakhalamos. Now, if you remember back to the Tosfos, we started this sugya today, Tosfos drew a distinction between Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni in the following sense. Kli Rishon has the funnest bakhalamos, that's hot walls. Kli Sheni has the funnest bakaros. But the Bagush has neither. It's true that it doesn't have the funnest bakaros, but it's equally true it doesn't have the funnest bakhalamos. So where do you put that? So this is a strange character. This is almost somewhere stuck in the middle. We're not sure what to do with it. So the Isavahetta before was Machmer, Machmer, Machmer. No defunas Bukaros, you have a problem. How bad a problem? A derisive problem. And now he's backpedaling a little bit. He said, no, you know what? Maybe I overdid a little bit. Because maybe it's lacking defunas Bukaros. So what? Where does it end up? Lacking Mechamos and lacking Mekaros. Now this veteran has a startling conclusion. And the last one, the Taz. We have forgot the Ein Kain Gam Deif Nekli Arish Shemachs V'chamim V'smanorach V'komok O'mevla Mi'ubola V'chuliyat Kamashayim. Bli as this still is. What does that mean, bli as this still is? What this veteran sounds like he's saying is retracting a little bit what he said before. That to say that something is Mevashel, it has to be a real bona fide Kli Rishon. And if it doesn't have the funnest mechamamos, it falls short of being labeled as a Kli Rishon. But just because it falls short of being a Kli Rishon and it can't be mevashel, it could still be mavliya. This is like a little bit of a throwback to differences between bishul and bliya. Bishul and bliya are not identical. So it could be that the standards for bishul and the standards for bliya are slightly different. There are really, in a sense, 3 degrees of kamenatzah. It's brisk plus, as they say. There's Kli Rishon, there's Kli Sheni, and there's something in the middle. We call it Kli 1.5. It's right smack in between Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni. It's not the funnest b'chamos, but it's not the funnest b'karos. So what can or can't it do in halacha? So here, the Isabella just created 3 distinct categories. In order to affect Bishul, the real McCoy, to be Chayvan Shabbos, that would be a Kli Rishon b'chol tokfo with the funnest b'chamos. In order to be a Kli Sheni b'chol tokfo and say, it's a joke, there's nothing to worry about, everything's after Gomor, it has to have the funnest b'karos. And if it has nishtein nishtehair, it's stuck somewhere in the middle, b'lias it can accomplish, and bishul it can't accomplish. Now, this is startling, because this appears to be a chivuk on the level of deraisa, because this is impacting on Shabbos and Mos b'chol. This is impacting the rising categories. It sounds like this Mehetra is telling us that although in Chazal we don't find any remnants whatsoever for this middle category. Not to mention, there is no 1.5 in Chazal. But the Mehetra says, well, he just quoted Tosis. Tosis was the one who said that the characteristics, Mechamos was Bukaros, what determined Rishon versus Sheni. So if you have one characteristic without the other, so you're in the middle. Right smack in the middle, you are 1.5. So there's Bishol and Kli Rishon. There's nothing in Kli Sheni, and there's Bliyas official in a 1.5, in between of a Davar Gush and a 1.5. But L'chaira, there's an internal contradiction in the Issa V'Hetter, because the Hetter really believes that this Davar Gush, which got stuck right between the cracks, there's a Kli 1.5, and it can only affect Bliyas and official. Can such a Kli create Bas V'Chol D'Raisa? If I have a hot piece of meat, take it out of the pot, sitting on the plate, and now a drop of milk falls onto it, or I cut it with a milking knife. So I just had I just had milk that's entering into this meat in the status of nishkli rishon nishkli sheni at 1.5. Can that create bas b'chol d'raisa? The answer is probably not, because bas b'chol d'raisa you need bishul sevashav di bishul shetayra to create b'liyas d'raisa. Maybe let's say the marshal if I had a piece of kosher meat, a hot piece of kosher meat sitting on a plate, and a drop of chazer fell onto it, so then I can argue, oh, yeah, yeah, that's a blia. That's not cold enough to be no blias. I can't call that tzadim adoch. I can't call that cliche in hard line cliche. That's a 1.5. Blia ziyah bishul no. And maybe even their isa. Maybe Tom kicks him in their isa. But that's a far cry to say that if a drop of milk, or in the case of the Shulchan Aruch, of a milk knife, falls onto or cuts into a piece of meat sitting on a plate, that's a far cry to say that's a deraisadik problem. Because to be a deraisadik problem, it is not enough to have bleas. You have to have bishul. If it's lacking bishul, it's nish deraisa. If it's not deraisa, then why is it asav hanoh? And remember, the Yisrael Hetter a minute ago said, it's Asar Fila Bahano. So there's something strange about this. The Yisrael Hetter is giving us two almost contradictory versions of what the status of the Magush is. He's not ignoring the Magush, not like the Ramah. The Ramah, Machtavet, didn't quote the Yisrael Hetter, ignored the whole thing. The Ramah says, there's no such thing as the Magush. It's just plain, simple, cliche, everything's at the government, so it's at the Dacha, call it a day. The Yisrael Hetter refused to go down that route. He dug up in Tosfos. He created a new category, a Kli number one, a Kli number two, and a Kli 1.5. And the status of 1.5 is Bli as Yagush will know. But in the same breath, the Yisrael Hetter told us that's also Fila Bahano, which is very, very strange, because to create this Bahano, it's not enough. It is not enough simply to say that they're Bli as you need much more than Bli as you need Bishul, which seems to be lacking. So there's almost an internal contradiction in the Yisrael Hetter. Could it be that the Yisrael Hetter changed his mind in the middle of the sentence? That at first he thought that it was real Bishul. At first he thought it's Asa Manah. And then he almost had second thoughts. And when he concludes that last line, you come up with Labola. So maybe he meant to almost retract that. Once he categorized 1.5 as being believed without Bishul, did he mean to say that, in fact, it's not going to be Asa Manah, can't be Asa Manah, because it's not a Derais anymore? A little bit unclear what the Yisrael Hetter said. So we really now have almost three different possibilities. What a take is on this Dovah Gush story. What is the status of this Dovah Gush? What can it or can't it do, both in terms of Blias as well as in terms of Bishul? So you
can
take
the... Rabbi, can I ask a question? According to the Yisrael Hetter, when is, if it's solid, when is it a Kli Rishon? Only when it's on the fire?
Right. Either on the fire or in the same pot that was on the fire, right?
Okay, so very limited.
Very, very limited, right. I mean, it's no more limited than any other Kli Rishon, in fact, right. So we have really conceptually three different possibilities what a take is on this Dovah Gush. You can take the Ramah's approach and say, the Shia's open, let's talk about it. Went to Ramah, it follows the regular rules of Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni. Once it's off the, once it's at the pot of the originally on the fire, or once it's on a plate, it's on a serving tray, the game's over. It's just a plain old cliche. That's the easy shot. Or you can take the extreme view, which is what the Yisrael Hetter sounded like at the beginning, that it's mamish dibikul kli rishon lagamrei, even vis-a-vis bishul. Or you can take almost the little bit of a watered down version of the Yisrael Hetter, that bli ziyeh bishul now. So how would we be able to test this theory? How would we be able to figure out what the din should be, particularly vis-a-vis bishul? So again, we have two areas of halacha that we can look for. One is we can look at Bas V'Chola, but the problem is we're getting almost a contradictory message from this Hetter vis-a-vis Bas V'Chola. So another good test case would be Hilchos Shabbos. Because remember, the start of our entire discussion already earlier in the week is that Bishul Shabbos and Bishul Bas V'Chola seem to be identical. I may have given it away by saying the word seem, because that seem may change. I don't know if it's going to change by today, but maybe by next week it may change. But seemingly are the same, because Torah says Lo Sebashel. And the Labatas Balachas were given to us as Bishul. So it sounds like we're going to be working, if they're both Dinim Der Aisa, we're going to work with the same definition of Bishul. So maybe instead of spending our time in Yerodea for now, maybe we should skip over to Orech Chaim. We should switch to Hilchos Shabbos and see how does the Vagush play out and not play out vis-a-vis Hilchos Shabbos. So the Shulchan Aruch in the fourth of the Maamar Kavos, Shulchan Aruch tells us, Osir Latuach Shemen Bishulim Alatzli Beodo Keneged Hamadura. That one is not allowed to smear oil or garlic, things that have not yet been cooked. One's not allowed to smear them onto a piece of meat that's roasting. Afilu mitzlat tzli beodo, even if the meat was roasted totally from before Shabbos, mikomokav yizbashla shum bashemen, because if you're going to smear the oil on. So that's tantamount to cooking the oil, which we learned in the Shabbos last sugya. There's a problem of bishul and oil. Or shum, you have garlic. If garlic is raw, there's a problem of bishul and the garlic. So you can't shmear the garlic against the meat. But notice where the Shulchan Aruch placed this meat. It's keneged hamadura. It's sitting by the fire. It means it's on a grill, it's sitting on a barbecue. So then you're not allowed to shmear the oil and the garlic. So comes the Magen Avraham, the fifth of the Maamar Kavos, and says, wait, don't misread that Shulchan Aruch. Lav dafka. He says, it doesn't have to be sitting literally by the fire. It doesn't have to be in the flame right now for it to be a problem. If it's hot, even if it's been taken off the fire, it's now sitting on the counter, it's sitting on the table, it's sitting on your plate. Says the Magen Avraham, if it's Reseach Yatza Letzbo, as long as it's Yatza Letzbo, which goes of Sevei, the Mashu Lashin Rashi, Mechain Koswa Paiskin Biardea, why is this a problem? Wait a second, if it's off the fire, isn't it a cliché? And didn't Rabbi Nosson say cliché in a Mavashel? So here the Magen Avraham says it, without any hesitation, the Dover Shul Gush Afilu B'cliché in a Mavashel, the Kochkin Sul, he says, it's a Dover Gush, and therefore the game is over. Dover Gush is a problem if it was cooked. Dover Gush is a problem if it was barbecued. If it's a hot, thick piece of meat, even though it's been transferred to 15 plates, if it's Yatza Letzbo, it's also to put Shum B'Shemen on it, because what you're going to be doing is an act of Bishul. So this Magen Avraham is almost like a Tchis HaMeisim for the Yisrael Hefta said at the beginning. When the Yisrael Hefta started off, he said, Gaval, this is a dinner to Bagush, and how bad is it? It's so bad, it asks the Filu B'Hanon. So, when we saw those words with Yisrael Hefta, quoted by the Taz, said, Asa Filu B'Hanon Yerideya, that was a code phrase for saying it's Deraisa, which in turn is a nice way of saying Bishul was accomplished. Because again, to be Boschov Deraisa, it has to have Bishul. So that was tantamount to saying Bishul just occurred. Yisrael Hefta at the end hesitated and said, maybe Bishul didn't occur. Maybe it's 1.5. It only had Bli, it's not Bishul. But the Tchilas, the Lord of the Yisrael Hefta seemed to committing himself to that Bishul actually occurred. But we weren't sure the Yisrael Hefta was, we're not saying the Magen Avraham just said it explicitly, Kamalim, because the Magen Avraham is written in Arachayim. The Magen Avraham didn't write it here today. He wrote in Arachayim. He's talking about Ilchus Shabbos. Ilchus Shabbos, the Isser on Shabbos is to cook. There's no Isser to cause Belias. One of the Lama Tes Malachas is not called, don't cause Belias. The Lama Tes Malachas are not to cook. If Dover Gush doesn't affect a Maisa Bishul, then it's not to be Isser on Shabbos. So the Magen Avraham said what the Yisrael Hefta said at the beginning, and whereas the Yisrael Hefta may or may not have backpedaled, the Magen Avraham doesn't backpedal, the Magen Avraham says exactly what he thinks, that it's Bishul Gomer Belishim something, the Bagush is a problem. And then, if the Magen Avraham saying it in Basmacholot, he's saying it in Shabbos, he would no doubt say it in Basmacholot as well. So now we've identified three different possible shittas. Now we have names for the shittas. What our take is on this Dabagush thing. The Ramah ignores its very existence. All the other Acharonim who accepted it based on Tosfos. It all started out, not for Tosfos, nobody would have dreamt of Dover Gush. The Tosfos started the ball rolling for Dover Gush. Within this new sheet of Dover Gush, we have a nuance in Balsim. It's had a little bit of a lack of clarity. I'm going to run very, very clear. Is Dover Gush Bishul Gomer, it's Mamash Didi for Klivishal, the whole Didi Atayra, Hein Bishabas, Hein Bashochov, creates Deraisis, creates Hanoas, creates this Eskila. It's the real Makoy Dover Gush, it's absolute Maisa Bishul. Or do I tone it down and say, no, Klivishal it's not? Klishevi it's not. It's this newfangled category of 1.5 Kli. That's what this meant to sound like at the end. Hopefully we'll see what's here next week. Other Echron who actually picked up on that as thinking that was the correct view. Is the Bagush exist as somewhere in the middle? So we have logically three different approaches to the Bagush. It all began with the Tosfos as to explain to us what the Klivisha Glishevi is. So the academic part of the sugya, the theoretical part of the sugya from earlier in the week, is now beginning to bear fruit in terms of defining first properly to be magdir what is a Klivisha, what's not a Glishevi, what's not a Klivisha. We'll get to show next week. So we'll pick up at this point with these three different nuances in Boskim vis-a-vis the Bagush and see how this is going to continue to play out for us. That will eventually bring us back to the sugyas of Boskim.